I didn't sing the song. Let's pray. Gracious God, we are ready to listen. I hope we have listened to you speak directly from your word. And now I ask that you let the words that I speak come from you as well, and that they be pleasing in your sight, and all of our meditations upon them also be good and pleasing to you. As is in Christ's name. Amen. The ancient world was very different from our modern world. Our modern world is very similar to the ancient world. Is that contradictory? They're apparently contradictory terms. They're also evidentiarily true. We are obviously much more technologically advanced than people living in the first century AD. Even more so than the tribal people that were around earlier, like when the psalmist lived, and even before that, when Abraham was running around. Even more highly technical than the Egyptians, who at that point in time, when they were the high-tech heroes of the ancient Near East, they had everything going for them. It doesn't take a lot to prove technological stuff is different than it was then. And a lot of people, maybe most people, look at that as the sign of advancement, of change. Maybe right, at least in part, because you need technology to develop a civilization like the one we have. First, in the order of things, you had to figure out how to transmit data from person to person and generation to generation. They had to come up with a language. And thanks to the Tower of Babel debacle, we have way too many languages. You know how many languages there are in the world? Different languages? Should have looked it up. I don't know. Bunches and bunches and bunches. You know, dialects in bunches and bunches and bunches. Language is an interesting thing. Winston Churchill once said that the Americans and the English were a common people separated by language. Because British English is very similar to American English or vice versa, but enough that we have some difficulties on this. So once we had all these different languages going, we slowed down. And then secondly, was agriculture. After you get out of just hunting stuff, picking stuff off of trees you didn't know what it was and eating it, hunting and gathering went by the wayside. We had agriculture, and people could get together, live together in larger and larger groups. People who were unrelated to each other. They got to know more people, spread it around. And groups of people meant safety. Safety from weather and beasts and other people. Third, and this is a direct descendant of those first two, civilization at that time in the past, and we still call them ancient civilizations, when in some ways we aren't that different, because civilization breeds politics. And no, I'm not going to preach politics here, but it breeds politics, which causes all kinds of unrest. But once you have a good definition of civilization, which I think is food sourcing, not depending on the vagaries of nature, which means you grow your own stuff. Communication, again, for talking to each other and kids and grandkids and on down the line. And then groups of people, villages, towns, and cities. If you have those kind of things, you have civilization, at least the source. Today, we add all kinds of rules and regulations on how we're supposed to live. This goes beyond God's Ten Commandments, which if we had those Ten Commandments and we lived by them, I don't think we really need anymore. Really? No. But people are people, so it doesn't work. Along with civilization, ambition came along. Because once people started living together in close proximity, some people wanted something someone else had. Again, that means the politics and fighting between tribes all got a wonderful thing. Civilization leads to a sense of propriety, morals, and being correct, rights even. And so trying to get ahead in that system gave you an outline of where you needed to go. And that seems natural to most people. I want to do something better than Bob so that I get promoted and he's left in the back. There's two ways to make leaders, you know that? One is to have the people who you are leading raise you up, bolster you, push you up. The other is to trample down everybody in the way. I have no data on it, but I would bet that more people get trampled than get raising up. Basically, I think it's just greed, the mentality, greed, ambition, want more. And all of our three scriptures today seem to agree with me. Actually, it's the other way around. I agree with what scripture says. And not just because I'm supposed to, because they're in the Bible. A lot of things are in the Bible that people try to twist and turn that aren't really there. But it is in the Bible, so it's got to be correct. I have no argument with that. Starting with the Psalms, the psalmist in 112, he takes the stance that uprightness, being living right, and obedience to God's commandment is the only way to live. He knows he's wrong because he sees other groups of people, other empires, as it were, other kingdoms that don't follow God's rules. And sees what happens to them. But the psalmist understands that following God's commandments, and at that time the Torah, was the way to live that is righteous. And that living as God desires us to live, relating to Him and to other people, has its rewards. The greatest reward that we can get is His idea, anyway, His perspective, is satisfaction. Helping somebody who needs help. Might not even be somebody, quote, in need. Drive down the road, you see someone with a flat tire, stop and help them. You feel good about that. I do anyway when I help people like that. But God makes promises that the psalmist repeats, and God keeps His promise. God says that those who live righteously will be blessed. Wealth and riches from God. Not necessarily, or even primarily, cash money. You ever heard of a guy named Jabez, and the prayer of Jabez? When was that out? 15, 20 years ago? Look it up. I don't remember the exact citation right now, but it's in the Old Testament. A guy named Jabez comes to God and prays, increase my boundaries. Give me more land. Give me more stuff. You know what God said? Okay. And he got more stuff, and he got more land, more responsibility. But he was a righteous guy, and he was being rewarded by God for living correctly. And people who do that become compassionate, maybe more compassionate, and merciful, and they won't be afraid. Are you afraid? Anything? Ever? I'm not talking about being scared, like, you know, in a thunderstorm and boom and you jump. Or nervous about taking your driver's license test again. You don't know if you're going to pass it. But truly afraid. Almost all of us get jittery at times. We get nervous at upcoming times and what you have to do. And we start to worry about, what's up? Have you heard that word? What's up? Recently old slang, I guess, but people worried about what's up tend to be afraid. Have you ever been, right now, maybe, are afraid? Now, I'm not afraid of anything. That's a true statement. I truly am not afraid of anything. You can scare me by coming behind me. Oh, this one here. This one here. I'm doing something, and all of a sudden, she said, Larry, and I jump out of my skin because I'm concentrating what I'm doing and I have no idea she's there. even when she very kindly, and she does this most of the time, tries to let me know she's coming. You do that fairly frequently. Hey, have you ever tried doing that on purpose? You ought to try doing it on purpose sometime and see if it works for you doing it on purpose. But I can get startled, I guess is a better word than scared. But I'm really not afraid of anything. I don't look forward to unpleasantness, but I live through it. There are times when I've been dead, but I don't remember anything about that, even fear at being dead. But then I've always looked at death, not something to fear, but as a promotion. That was the line I used to use when I was in the prison. So I'm not afraid of anything. You know why? God. God keeps his promises. Plain and simple, I'm not afraid because God. Father, Son, Spirit. I'm not exactly sure when I lost my fear. A long time ago, but I don't remember exactly when it was. I know exactly when I stopped worrying, but I can't think when I stopped being afraid. It's been a long time. But life becomes simpler in other ways when you lose your fear. And people don't get it. They don't get how can you just go and do anything. And you need to deal with that because you catch a lot of flack from folks, a lot of misunderstanding from folks when you just go and do something. So what? I don't care. I'm not going to let God wimp out on me because he's not going to do that. I'm not going to wimp out on God. Not be afraid. It even says we won't be shaken or afraid of evil rumors. What it says exactly is they will not be afraid of any evil rumors. Their heart is right. They put their trust in the Lord. Their heart is established and will not shrink. Their righteousness stands fast forever, and they will hold up their heads with honor. God raises up the merciful and the just and puts down those who are evil. And there are some evil people in this world. Star Wars gave us that dark side of the Force. And now people can turn to the dark side. Well, people do that. They are unrighteous, the ungodly. And that brings us from the ancient world back to today and back again, all the way around. As Christians today, not just as Jews, as the psalmist was, we need to live according to the formulae God lays down. Again, it's pretty straightforward. Just do what's right. Learn from the book. Do what's right and follow God. Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life, the only way. Again, all three of these lessons hooked together in Hebrews, he says that let mutual love continue. I mean, even when, I don't know, I get mad at Ellie for something, and we have an argument, do I hold that grudge forever? No. It should go bye-bye. You continue your love for each other. I'll bet you anything, every one of you has at least one person in your life that you love, but you don't like very much. Think about it, you probably come up with at least one person, and sometimes that shifts back and forth. Let mutual love continue. Don't neglect hospitality to strangers. Remember those in prison. Let marriage be held in honor. Keep your lives free from the love of money. You know that expression, money is the root of all evil? That's a misquotation, by the way. It's not here, it's elsewhere. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. Greed. Be content with what you have. Because God has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. You got God, you have everything. Old blues gospel song says, you ain't got Jesus, you ain't got a thing. Blind William Johnson, 1930s, something like that. You ain't got Jesus, you ain't got a thing. You got Jesus, you've got everything you need. These words from Hebrews follows exactly what we're looking at in the song. and dealing with what sets Christians apart from other people and fit into our lives anyway, as fully as possible. Sometimes we have to compromise with people and what we do, what we say. Some of us do it very, very reluctantly, and usually under pressure from somebody. But never, ever, ever compromise on God. If you can't stand for God, you'll fall down for anything. Sometimes you have to work around unpleasant situations, and it can be tough. No kidding. But it happens. You know, Jesus was big on this too. Not working around situations, but right living. He did not walk around Israel clothed in Pharisee outfits. He did not run around looking like a rabbi. He was not wearing fancy duds. He looked exactly what he was. A middle-class carpenter. Who also happened to be the only begotten Son of God. But people didn't know that. People knew Jesus as a righteous man. Even the Romans who crucified him. They crucified him for political reasons, not for just politics. Maybe. For political reasons, not for any crime or sin that he committed. It was not necessarily unlawful or sinful what he did. But just like today, it was unpopular, as it was in the first century Roman Empire. Again, the ancient world was very different from our modern world. Our modern world is very similar to the ancient. That's a paradox in thinking, but as Christians, we are paradoxes in the world. We don't fit in. We are countercultural. We have been countercultural since the beginning, and we always will be until Jesus comes along. We are countercultural not just to make pains of ourselves, not to jerk somebody's chain, but because the world always has been, generally, counter-God, anti-God. Gotta remember, it's not just the atheists out there who are against God. Anyone who practices any religion other than Judaism or Christianity is working against God because they're all worshiping false gods, idols. And we're going to always be in that contention until Jesus shows up again and straightens out the mess we've made of this world. Because it looks like we can't fix it none, even if we try. Again, let's go back to the story that Luke was telling. If you look at it, he says Jesus was under scrutiny and they were watching him closely. Big Brother and company. Big Pharisee and company. The political strong arms trying to catch him out if they could, but they never could. They'd ask him a question and put him in a corner, and all of a sudden the door would open, he'd walk through it and figure it out. Not a problem for him. The power hungry. Always kind of thing. Jesus noticed at dinner, while they were getting ready to eat, the ambitious, power hungry, rich, wanting to be richer, greedy, narcissist, and wannabes. They were going and sitting at the high end of the table. They wanted to be important in society, at least in themselves, to start. Jesus describes as probably the majority of people in our society today. People are always trying to win favor with others. Dean, you look extremely dashing this morning. It's good to see you back after your wonderful trip. We greatly missed you, and we prayed for you every hour on the hour, all day long, every day. Okay. Buttering them out, flattery, whatever. Then and now. And it's usually worse when you try to make friends or flatter, gain favor with people who are, quote, over you. Someone you work for. Someone who could help you out in times of difficulty. They fall into all those categories that Jesus mentioned in his description of his banquet. And, as was said earlier about his later, don't invite those who can pay you back, but those who can't. Oh, I'm not going to deal with him. He can't do anything for me. How many times have you gotten sloughed off because someone didn't think you were important enough to help them? And I talk about, I don't think Bob can help me with that, so I'm not even going to bother. Not what I'm talking about. Because there are some things that, I need to change a hinge on this. Do I need to get Bob to help me? No. So why should I bother him? But that's just simple practicality. As opposed to trying to, hey, Bob, can you come and help me put this hinge on? I know you're really good at it. I don't have a clue. In which case, he's no, I'm trying to butter him up because he knows darn well I can change it. But these people want to be noticed. And then, my mother was really bad at this. I just thought it was a little rabbit trail, but she would not ask Pat, can you help me out with this? That would be the very last resort she would take. Because if you say, sure, no problem, I'd be glad to. And you meant it just like that. You'd be glad to. Now I owe Pat something. And that's how she thought. And there are some people that, you do something for them and you expect to get back. That's your problem. If you do something nice to get, it's your problem. But she was really bad about that. And Jesus is saying you shouldn't be looking to get paid back. Goodness of your hearts, kindness of your heart. If you want to use that kind of a trite expression, you reach out and help. Because what happens is, when Pat, you don't come and help me out again, well, I'm getting mad at you. Look through that. Yeah, that's people. After all I've done for you, and this is what you do to me. Be honest with yourselves. Have you ever said or thought, after all I've done for you? I'll admit it. How many people said that to you? After all I've done for you? And Jesus is not condemning having a party with people you work with or work for or just having fun. But it's the motivation and expectation of the people that are invited and why they are invited that Jesus called the question. He says, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. Which makes us assume that the guy throwing a party was not crippled, lame, blind, or whatever. And you will be blessed by God. Not necessarily get a 10,000 check in the mail next day. But at the end, you will be repaid with the resurrection of the righteous. And Jesus isn't giving us here the dummy's guide for getting into heaven. And there is such a way. But he is explaining the lifestyle and the manner in which people should live according to God's commandments and the rules that God gives us to live by. Not to get paid back. Not to get that check in the mail. Not to get a new Cadillac or something or other. But to be cherished by God, which allows us to cherish each other. Unfortunately, that isn't any easier today than it was 2,000 years ago. Maybe it's even worse because people as a whole don't want to live as God tells us to live and wants us to live. And they don't like other people telling them what to do. Dot, you got to live by the Ten Commandments. Jimmy, Dorothy, you got to live by the Ten Commandments. Miss Smith, you have to live by the Ten Commandments. I just said that three times to illustrate a point of Hebrew. When something is important, it's repeated three times. Go back and look at the Psalms. You'll see that. But people don't want other people telling them what to do.
God's not my boss. God's my only boss.
I got my keeper. I've got supervisors. She ain't my boss. Because if anybody tries to tell me to do something contrary to what the Jewish carpenter does, it gets me in trouble. Hope it doesn't ever get me in trouble with y'all. But it doesn't happen. God doesn't force us. He says, this is how I would like you to live. How I want you to live. But God didn't make puppets. Not pulling our strings while we have free will. It doesn't force the issue. And that's why we're a mess, because we don't follow God. Coming up to the last things here, one other thing about people is this. People change constantly. Except for me, I'm exactly the same as I was when I was 15. I haven't changed a bit. Okay, you cut my hair more often. But I'm exactly the same. Haven't changed a bit. Yeah, right. But they change. Either to the good or to the bad or just changing. Which is good, which is fine, which is okay. You have to change. With the times, not with the times, with life in general. You have to change. You have to adapt. But sometimes people change just for the sake of change. And I... You know what? We need to start on our treasure hunting. We need to start looking for a new cross like this. Because this is old. It's been around for a while. Let's get rid of it. Do we need to? No. I accidentally knock it off the communion table here. It hits the floor and it breaks up here and I can't fix it. Do I find a new one? Yeah. Does it have to be exactly the same? No. We should really should do that. We should keep an eye out for one. Get, you know, one that's multicolored and, you know, pretty. Change for the sake of change drives me crazy. And that, I just don't get it. A lot of things about me that people never get. A lot of things about people I never get. That's one of them. Partly because we do have an outline for life. And when they start changing, that school shooting this past week, the guy who shot the kids up, wrote a manifesto. I read part of it yesterday. And the guy is transgender, and he says, I hate it. I don't want to be. Doesn't say exactly, but certainly he was forced into being a woman type, even though he's a guy. I feel like cutting my hair, but if I do that, that's admitting defeat. The guy was a nut job. But he changed for some reason, outside of God's plan, didn't fit him. I guess is why he went and did that, but, and though I'm not saying he went and shot up a school because he was a transgender guy, he shot up the school because he was nuts. And it was reflected in his attitude about himself. He tried to change, or was forced to try to change, and it didn't fit the mold. I don't get that either. But no matter how we view any of this, all of this, and the changeability / stability of civilization, one thing is certain. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. God doesn't change. Father doesn't change. Spirit don't change. And Jesus is the same. And I don't care about what people think about where I sit, or stand, or walk, what I do, how I dress. I don't care. Because I care. Think about that one. I preached that for 4 years in the prison. People still didn't get it. The inmates did. Security never did. But I care about God. And my keeper. And y'all. But it's not going to break me if you... Do I get turned against by anybody? Okay. Fine. I accept it. As long as I'm true to myself and to God. But I do care about what God thinks of me. And that's what you should think about, is what God thinks about you, not your next-door neighbor. Although you were very nice about your next-door neighbor or nearby neighbor and their mess in the newspaper the other day. You're very kind in your words, Pat. That house that's falling apart. I mean, you did. It was very well written. It was very. I appreciated it. It was good. Okay, and there are people now that probably don't care about you too much. They don't like you, and you know what you were gonna say? I don't care. Right? Yeah. The only place I ever think about caring about where I sit, as long as I sit on God's table. Or God's side of the table. That's where. That's where we all. And that's where we should care about him, regardless of what other people think about it.